We have a special offer for first-time donors to Issues Etc. For any size gift during the months of January and February, we'll send you an autographed copy of Pastor Will Wheaton's new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. Make your first-time contribution online at issuesetc.org or send your check to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, and we'll send you an autographed copy of Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. She is remembered not only by the church on the 20th of January, she is remembered in the New Testament. You could count her among the heroes, or in her case, the heroines of faith. It is said of her that she regarded him faithful who had made the promise, and that's really saying a lot. Of course, we're talking about the wife of Old Testament patriarch Abraham, who for the better part of her life is known mostly for being childless, then for having a child that, well, the writer of the Hebrews says she conceived by faith. Joining us to remember Sarah, wife of Old Testament patriarch Abraham, Pastor Tom Egger. He's assistant professor of Old Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Tom, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be here.
There are a lot of people named in Hebrews chapter 11, Old Testament figures, so-called heroes of the faith. Abraham gets a lot of play, and some other women along the line, too. But Sarah gets a section there, too, in verse 11. Why is that?
Well, because she is one to whom God made promises and who lived in the midst of those promises. And though, like most of the great heroes of the faith, so to speak, in the Old Testament, though her faith was not perfect, and she has a lot of chinks in her armor, so to speak, in terms of how she actually expressed and lived out that faith, she trusted in God's promise. And the real key in that litany of the faithful in Hebrews 11 is that these are people who saw God's faithfulness to his promises, and they saw the fruit of those promises realized in many ways, and even in the ways that they did not yet see, they still continued to hope.
It says of her, she considered him faithful who had made the promise. That's saying a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. She actually experienced visits from the Lord along with Abraham. And when the time was right, even though it seemed to take a very long time, she also experienced the faithfulness of God.
We sometimes forget the kind of odd relationship that she has with her husband, Abraham, not only his wife, but also technically his sister as well. How does that work out?
Yeah, well, we don't know a whole lot about the details other than that in one of these two episodes, there's the two famous episodes, or maybe infamous episodes, we should say. I don't know that they're all that well known because they're so strange. I think we tend to set them off to the side, but two episodes where Abraham, in the wild and violent world that they lived in at the time, as he journeyed to different places, once down to Egypt in the presence of Pharaoh and once to the city of Gerar, he encouraged Sarah to tell others that he was his sister rather than his wife because she was so beautiful, and he was worried that others would kill him because of her. And in both instances, she is taken into the household of the king, but not touched, not mistreated. So the marriage isn't violated in that way, but it certainly is put at risk. And in the second of those episodes, when the king comes out, God has warned the king in a dream. He says, you're as good as dead because you've done this. And he's closed the wombs of all the women in the king's household so that none are able to conceive children. And so the king sends Sarah back to Abram and says, why have you done this to me? Why have you deceived me in this way? Why have you brought such guilt upon me? And why did you say she was your sister when she's your wife? And it's that passage where we learn, because Abraham says in response to him, well, I wasn't lying when I said that she's my sister. She is my sister, though not of my mother. She's the daughter of my father by another wife, and she became my wife. So we in our day, would not have marriage arrangements in that way, nor would they in the Old Testament after the giving of the law at Sinai, but that in those early times, apparently that was sometimes the practice.
I just want to explain that because that's going to kind of stick in the mind of those who are listening to us. Mm-hmm. What is Abraham? Do we have any idea why Abraham does that not once but twice? Why he seems to want to portray his wife as a prospect for marriage of these foreign royalty?
Yeah, it's if I had a sure answer for that, I would share it. But I have to say the text perplexes me. Why does he go about things in this way? Is it an expression of a lack of faith in God? Is it somehow morally permissible? Doesn't seem to be. That doesn't seem to be a good answer. So in both instances, he actually comes out enriched by the situation. And in the case of his trip to Egypt with Pharaoh deals very generously with him on account of his sister. And when he sends him away, he retains all of these goods, all this property and gain.
I mean, was Abraham a gambling man? I mean, it sounds like he is a wealthy man, but it also sounds like he kind of knows how to game the system.
Yeah, right. By the second time, perhaps he thinks, well, it turned out okay the first time. And I don't know. You know, there's different ways to think about that. On the one hand, you could, I suppose, perhaps say that he's presuming on God's promises. He knows that God has made promises that he's going to have all these offspring. So he perhaps is putting God to the test even to preserve Sarah and to preserve that union. But it's not something that if I had a young couple coming in for premarital counseling and talking about the best way to navigate marriage, that this is not a strategy for keeping a healthy, happy marriage that I would recommend.
So is there any question that when the promise comes to Abraham, and then the promise, of course, is not fulfilled of a child for another 25 years?
Yeah, it's remarkable.
Is there any question that by the time we get to the fulfillment of this promise, both Abraham and Sarah have not only been unable to conceive a child,
right,
but now are, in every sense that is humanly measurable, completely unable to conceive?
Yeah, that is the story of Abraham and Sarah, and particularly with Sarah, that's the constant refrain in the narrative. In fact, the very first time she's introduced in the book of Genesis, it's before God's promises to Abraham, before his command to leave his home and his family and go to the land that he will show him. And it's in the genealogy of Abram's father. And in this genealogy, it mentions that Abram's father, Terah, has two sons, Abraham and Nahor. It mentions their wives. It mentions Milcah, the wife of Nahor. Then it mentions Sarah, and with her, it specifically says that Sarah was barren. She was childless. And that statement keeps getting repeated, that she's barren, she's childless. So it's not just her old age, it's that all the way along she's been unable to conceive children. And the New Testament then reflects back on that, and it says that Sarah, her womb was dead, her body was dead in that sense. She was as good as dead. And also Abram, because he was so old, it says he too, and his body was as good as dead. And yet God, in that circumstance, shows his power. He shows himself to be the one who, not just providing any child, although the Old Testament emphasizes the birth of any child is a miraculous work of God, he alone opens and closes the womb. He alone creates life. But with this child in particular, this is solely the work of the merciful and mighty God who is at work restoring humanity to himself. This is the line of promise. And all of these blessings, the blessings promised to Abraham and his seed and through his seed to all the nations of the earth, they are in God's mind and they're being worked out in history here. And this is not the work of man. This is solely the work of God. And that's why it's so significant that this child promised to Sarah is not just naturally conceived, so to speak. It is clearly a miraculous work of God.
It seems as though Abraham and Sarah are trying to kind of find a workaround to a lot of this, because Abraham proves able to conceive children through the suggestion of his wife.
Right.
Take my maidservant and right. conceive with her, which actually occurs. What's that story in there about?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? God has made these great promises to Abraham, and the promises center on numerous descendants. He keeps repeating that his descendants are going to be numerous, blessings are going to come all to all the nations of the earth through his seed. It's his seed that's going to his offspring that's going to inherit the land of Canaan eventually. And so he knows he's going to have a lot of children, but as the narrative goes on, he still has zero. And God has not specifically said that his children will be through Sarah. Now, in Genesis 17, he does specifically say, your children will be through Sarah, and he changes Sarah's name from Sarai to Sarah, means princess in both cases. But he says also of Sarah in Genesis 17, you will be the mother of many nations, and kings will come from you. So it's the same promises he's made to Abram. Now it's clear it's going to be through Sarah, but that's after they've decided to try to creatively help God's promises come true by Abraham lying with Sarah's handmaiden Hagar and having a child through her.
It also demonstrates maybe part and parcel of what we were discussing before about Abraham trying to enrich himself, perhaps, by presenting his wife as an option for marriage of foreign royalty. It goes hand in hand with the fact that this introduces strife, even in some sense kind of an exile of this child.
Yeah, it seems like a very sad picture. In fact, there's a lot of weeping involved in the story. There's the strife, first of all, between the two wives, or I suppose his wife and her servant, but both the mothers of his sons. Ishmael is born to Hagar, and even as soon as Ishmael is conceived, Hagar turns on Sarah and begins to mistreat Sarah and mock her, because she clearly now is shown to be the one who was the one of the married couple that was unable to conceive. And Sarah complains. She rebukes Abraham. She blames it on him that there's this mistreatment. Abram sends Hagar away out into the desert, putting her at peril. But God hears her cries. And actually, Abram doesn't send her away that first time. Hagar just flees because of the mistreatment and fearing Sarah. She's so afraid. She apparently fears for her life. She flees, but God appears to her, sends her back. Once Isaac is born and the sons start to grow up a little bit, then Ishmael begins to mistreat Isaac. And again, Sarah complains to Abraham. Abram sends Hagar away, and that time God miraculously provides water for them in the wilderness, shows them a well, and fulfills his promise that he is going to watch over also Hagar and Ishmael. But all kinds of strife within the family because of, I suppose you could say in some ways, because of a lack of faith in God's promise, the attempt to take God's plans into their own hands rather than waiting on the Lord.
We're talking about Sarah, the wife of Old Testament patriarch Abraham. Pastor Tom Egger is our guest, assistant professor of Old Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. When we come back, when the Lord visits Abraham and Sarah at the Oaks of Mamre.
This book is all about how to help recover piety in the house.
Pastor Will Wheaton, talking about his new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety.
What do you do when people have confused a legalistic pietism for any form of Christian piety? And by piety, I just mean godly habits.
Learn more about Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey at issuesetc.org.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
More topics, more guests, more Jesus. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Why does it feel like everyone's always angry on social media? What exactly is a podcast? Is digital technology helping or hurting your spiritual life? How can the church harness the power of the internet to reach the lost? If these questions hit home for you, you won't want to miss this month's issue of the Lutheran Witness magazine on digital technology and the church. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Do you need a home mortgage, car, or student loan in 2018? Check out Lutheran Federal Credit Union. During January, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Grace Place Lutheran Retreats. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU, good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, remembering Sarah, wife of Old Testament patriarch Abraham. Pastor Tom Egger is our guest. One of the things that we've said here about Sarah is that she considered him faithful who had made the promise. We see even in this way, even in a kind of crooked life that she lived with the patriarch Abraham, she is not only trusting the one who made the promise, but she is confessing the one who made the promise, confessing Christ. That's one of the godly habits that is enumerated in the Issues, Etc. book of the month for January from Pastor Will Wheaton. Thank, praise, serve, and obey. Confessing Christ, one of those elements of Lutheran piety you'll find in this great handbook of Lutheran piety. Find out more about Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and order this book, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Let's talk a little bit about that visitation you had mentioned earlier. When the Lord comes to Abraham and Sarah, they're under the oaks of Mamre in the guise of a visitor with two travelers, and Sarah is included in that meeting.
Yeah, well, we see aspects of Sarah's personality that really aren't admirable. We saw that in her back and forth with her maidservant, even some of her back and forth with Abraham. And in this encounter, it's the Lord himself who comes, like you said, in the guise of three visitors, the Lord and two angels. Perhaps some church fathers think the Holy Trinity is appearing there, but later on it seems to be two angels who go on to Sodom and Gomorrah. But in any case, the text makes it clear it's the Lord himself who's visiting them with these three visitors. And as Sarah overhears, she's standing back in the tent, as she overhears the Lord repeat these promises to Abraham, promises that she's well aware of, promises that she's been hearing from Abraham now for many years. Since he was 75 years old, he has been the bearer of these promises, and he's now 99 years old. Sarah is 90, or at this time, I guess, as she stands there listening, probably 89 years old. And she hears the Lord speak these promises again, that at this time next year, Sarah will have a son. And she laughs. Famously, she laughs. And chapters before this, God has, in his speaking promises to Abraham, he said, when you have this son that I'm going to give you, name him Isaac, which means laughter. And it's interesting then that here the promise of the son does bring forth laughter. It brings forth skeptical laughter on the part of Sarah. Of course, clear back in chapter 17, Abram, it says, fell on his face and laughed because of God's promises and said to himself, shall a child be born to a man who's 100 years old? And so now when the visitors come in chapter 18, Sarah gets her turn to laugh. And yet when the child is born, she laughs again. She laughs in joy. And she says, his name's going to be Laughter. God has given me laughter. He has worked laughter in my life. And all who hear about this are going to laugh with me. So she's an example of faith, like the New Testament emphasizes, but she's a realistic example of faith. She's like us. She finds God's promises sometimes too good to be true, and it's hard sometimes to trust in God's promises. And yet, mixed in with all of that doubt and confusion and dismay in the midst of her circumstances is true God-given faith. And that's why the New Testament can celebrate her as an example of true faith in the God who keeps his promises.
After the birth of Isaac, we don't hear anything about her until she dies. We're given a little kind of a brief bio of her there, a very brief, and then a rather lengthy, you're going to have to explain some of this, negotiation that Abraham undertakes to get a burial plot for her there right. in the land. Why is that? It's kind of confusing to read it, but why is that significant enough to have been recorded here?
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting back and forth with the Hittite people who are settled in right in that area there by Mamre. Now, this is a cave in a field belonging to Ephron the Hittite that Abram's interested in purchasing as a grave site for their family in the immediate term for his wife who's died, for Sarah. And the people there want to just give it to him. And he is insistent that he not receive this as a gift from their hands. And I think that's probably significant because this land is the land of divine promise that he's living in, but he has not yet received it from God. God hasn't yet given him the land or given the land to his offspring, and he is not willing to let others give him that land. Maybe he's learned his lesson from the experience with Hagar and trying to take God's promises into his own hands. So he's going to wait to be given the land. And for now, he just needs a burial place, and he's going to pay for that with the wealth that God has given him rather than receiving it as a gift and being indebted to others. It seems perhaps in the text like knowing his insistence, his neighbors take advantage of that and name a pretty exorbitant price for this field and this cave, but he pays the full price willingly. And that becomes then the grave, not only that Sarah is buried in, but it's the grave that Abraham himself will be buried in. It's the grave that Isaac and Rebekah will be buried in. And it's the grave that Jacob and Leah will be buried into eventually. Jacob's brought all the way up from Egypt after he and his sons have gone down to Egypt. He's brought up in wagons provided by the Pharaoh in his coffin to be buried in the family tomb. Only Rachel of those first three generations, only Rachel is buried elsewhere because she died in childbirth when they were living somewhere else. So she was buried near Bethlehem.
I want to know, is it significant theologically that until they come back and possess this land generations later, the only little postage stamp size piece of geography that Abraham actually owns and at a dear price in that land promised to him by God is a tomb?
Yeah. All they had was God's promise. And as time went on, the longer time went on, and especially when they found themselves sojourning down in Egypt for hundreds of years, eventually being enslaved down there, certainly it seemed like those promises were now impossible. The promise that they were going to inherit this entire land, the land of Canaan. And so it really is parallel, isn't it, to Abraham and Sarah waiting for a son. As those years ticked by, those were very long years from age 75 to age 100 for Abraham. And yet God allowed them to wait. Why did God make them wait all that time? Why in the world would he put them through that? And, you know, we don't have an answer to that question, but we do know from these stories, these constant stories that have been written for our instruction of the way that God has dealt with his people, is that God oftentimes allows his people to wait. And that's what faith is. Faith is still believing that God will make good on his promises because he has in the past, and he is a faithful God. And so we too are waiting for the fulfillment of many of God's promises on the last day. And we know that he's going to keep those promises, but it isn't always easy to wait. So that's the situation that Abram's family was in, waiting for the land. All they had was a grave of all things. And yet it's interesting that in that grave lie Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And in the New Testament times, when people are disputing God's faithfulness to raise the dead, Jesus points to them and says, hey, he's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living. And those three men who had that great promise but never received anything in a sense other than a grave in that land are heirs of the heavenly country that God has prepared for his people. And they yet will share in the great hope of the land inheritance of God's people in the age to come.
Pastor Tom Egger is Assistant Professor of Old Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Tom, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us to Remember Sarah.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we'll continue our series on ethical thinking according to Christ himself, talking about how not all ethics are ethical. Dr. Gregory Scholz will be our guest, professor of philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Then we're going to play Issues, Etc., soundbite of the week. We'll play the four soundbites. You give us a call, send us an email, a tweet, or go to our Facebook fan page and vote there. Your vote will decide which will be Issues, Etc., soundbite of the week. Stay tuned for Hour 2.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for You and the Divine Service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.